WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davey, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in for Terry Gross. Negotiations continue in the United Nations over a ceasefire proposal for Lebanon, aimed at ending the fighting between Israel and Hezbollah, which has resulted in hundreds of civilian casualties. For some perspective on the crisis, we turn to Augustus Richard Norton. He's a professor of international relations and anthropology at Boston University. Before entering the private academic world, Norton had a 27-year military career that included two combat tours in Vietnam, 12 years on the faculty at West Point, and 14 months as an observer in southern Lebanon in 1980 and 81. Augustus Richard Norton is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and has written widely on Shia politics. He has a forthcoming book on Hezbollah. I spoke to him yesterday. Well, Augustus Richard Norton, welcome to Fresh Air. The incident which touched off the current fighting was this raid by Hezbollah, apparently quite well planned to attack Israeli forces and capture some soldiers. What do you think prompted Hezbollah to undertake this action?
Since the 1990s, Hezbollah and Israel have developed a very clearly understood set of rules, if you will, rules of the game. And these rules basically defined how combat would be conducted in South Lebanon. One of the basic rules was that civilians would not be attacked, for example, that Israeli territory would not be invaded. In return, the Israelis would not bombard Lebanese civilians, and so on. These rules of the game were so well understood by both sides that after various incidents, it would not be unusual for an Israeli general or a Lebanese official or Hezbollah official to remark that this or that operation was within the rules of the game. What happened on the 12th of July was that Hezbollah was trying to stretch the rules. The operation that was conducted was not in Lebanon. It was actually inside of Israeli territory. And, of course, the purpose was to capture Israeli soldiers as bargaining chips in order to leverage the freeing of Lebanese prisoners in Israeli jails. There had been a major prisoner release in January of 2005, but several of the prisoners were excluded from that release by the Israelis. So this was basically to finish the deal from the standpoint of Hezbollah. Unfortunately, Hezbollah was trying to stretch the rules, but for the Israelis, this is the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak, and they, in effect, tore up the rule book at that stage.
Do you believe that there was, you know, some talk that Iran might have urged or ordered Hezbollah to undertake this, to take attention away from its own difficulties regarding its nuclear program, or that Syria might have played a role? Was this Hezbollah leaders acting on its own, do you believe?
I've said from the very beginning that I think it's very unlikely that this was directed by Tehran, certainly not by the Syrians. The Hezbollah-Syrian relationship is not of that nature. This is an operation which had been, in effect, announced and planned some months before. In fact, there was an unsuccessful attempt to do something very similar in November of last year. So this was a matter of a target of opportunity. I think that in many ways what's happened, of course, is not necessarily in Iran's strategic or geopolitical interest. And I'm doubtful personally that that Iran ordered the action. I also note that U.S. government officials have noted on several recent occasions that there's no evidence that they've discovered to indicate an Iranian role in directing the July 12th operation.
Okay, clearly Israel responded with an attack that it seemed to have been planning for some time to go to sweep in and attack Hezbollah positions in Lebanon. And, you know, a lot of people looked at this and said Israel was in a position that no sovereign state could tolerate. I mean, a sworn enemy with 10,000 rockets right on its border, an enemy dedicated to the destruction of its state, and that this campaign, with its regrettable consequences to civilians was, in effect, a legitimate exercise of national defense. What about that argument? What do you think of that argument?
Well, I think there's something to that, but before I address that in more detail, let me remind our listeners that from 2000, the year 2000, to the year 2006, and 2000, of course, was the year that Israel withdrew its forces from occupation in Lebanon. During that six-year period, a total of one Israeli civilian was killed by Hezbollah fire. And about 25, in fact, exactly 25 Israeli soldiers were killed during that period of time. While those casualties are regrettable, that compares to an average number of Israeli deaths during the years of occupation of about 25 per year. So many Israeli officials have admitted, it's well on the record at this stage, that that six-year period was quite quiet by historical standards, and that, in effect, the border was more or less stable. Now, Israel had every right to respond to the provocation by Hezbollah on the 12th of July. However, in my view, and I think in the view of many other foreign policy specialists, what the Israelis have done is really over the top and is quite counterproductive for reasons that I'll be happy to explain. And it should also be said that this war, this Israeli war, for in effect hegemony, is really an Israeli-American war. Early on, George Bush called on Israel to exercise restraint, not to target Lebanese infrastructure, not to target the Lebanese government. Either the Israelis blew off George Bush, which is unlikely, or they understood that Bush was saying this with a wink and a nod. And in fact, the dawdling diplomacy that the U.S. has practiced since the 12th of July, as well as the large shipments of arms, jet fuel, and so on, not to mention intelligence, clearly indicate that this is not simply an action by Israel. This is an action by the U.S. and Israel together.
Yeah, I want to go back to what you said a moment ago, describing this action as, in effect, an act to establish hegemony by Israel. Now, you know, you noted that they did, in fact, withdraw from Lebanon in the year 2000. And it does seem that in the period since then that Hezbollah has increased the number and sophistication of the weapons it has acquired from its international allies, thereby increasing its ability to strike more deeply into Israel. I mean, again, coming back to the argument here, I mean, didn't Israel have a right to attempt to neutralize such a dangerous threat to its own population right on its borders? How do you see that as an attempt to establish hegemony?
The Israelis have said repeatedly that one of the goals of this war is to reestablish their, quote, deterrence, unquote. And really that means hegemony. That means their ability to ensure that their neighbors, their adversaries, do not do anything that offends Israeli interest. Now, I grant your point, and it's certainly true that Hezbollah has acquired a significant arsenal, and we see evidence of that every day in terms of the weapons that are being fired and so on. And if the Israelis could have eliminated that arsenal relatively quickly and cleanly, as Ehud Olmert promised George Bush in a private discussion, then it would be a different matter. The problem is that this is difficult terrain. This is a hardened force which was honed, basically, under years of Israeli occupation, and a force with a lot of social support. And I think it's important to remember that the Israelis have killed 20,000 Lebanese civilians over the last quarter century. So the people, particularly of southern Lebanon, have a very strong incentive to have a force that they can defend them. So, you know, if poof, these missiles and other weapons could have been made to disappear, that's fine. I did not think from the very beginning that the Israelis would be able to do that. And whoever the analysts were, that advised Ehud Olmert or George Bush that this would be an easy operation. Well, I think what they deserve is a meeting with the president or the prime minister, and perhaps the appropriate comment would be, heck of a job, you're fired.
Well, I'll note as you make that comment that you do have a military as well as an academic background in this area.
Yeah, I was an Army officer for 27 years. I served two tours in combat as an infantry officer, a paratrooper. And then, of course, I've been in other combat zones for fairly long periods of time. I also taught at West Point for more than 12 years in the social sciences department at West Point.
You said earlier that Israel was responsible for, I think, 20,000 civilian deaths in Lebanon over the past couple of decades.
That's right. Most of them in the context of the 1982 invasion.
Where does the figure come from?
The majority of the deaths occurred in the period 82 to 83 or 84, and these are deaths documented by Lebanese authorities. These are registered deaths. The figures have been gone over by a number of different scholars. They're pretty good. I don't remember the exact number from that period. It was something like 15,900. And then the other deaths are accumulation. Of course, there are 900 in this conflict already. In 96, there were 106 killed in a shelling incident at a UN base in Kana, the same Kana that was bombed last week. So it's an accumulation over a period of time. And during that time, of course, there have also been many homes destroyed and people displaced and so on. There's been a sort of constant movement of refugees back and forth the south, from the south of Lebanon to Beirut and so on, as these conflicts have gone on.
Were you surprised at the ferocity of the Israeli assault?
I was surprised because, in my view, it is so obviously counterproductive for the Israelis to be doing what they're doing. Up until now, which is to say up until July of 2006, the Israelis have responded to provocations by Hezbollah with restraint, and the opposite is true as well. Israeli commentators, for example, one leading journalist writing in Haaretz just a couple of weeks before the war began, remarked on, if you will, the rational relationship between the Israelis and their adversaries in Lebanon. So I was surprised by the willingness of the Israelis to pull out many, if not all, of their stops in terms of their assault on Lebanon. And as I've emphasized, I think that what they've done is patently counterproductive. They're in a context in which time has actually worked against them, because time has allowed Hezbollah to demonstrate that it can stand up to Israel, that Israel does not have the overweening military capacity that it would like to have, and, of course, with the civilian casualties and damages to infrastructure and so on, this has had a very negative rippling effect across the region, both to the disadvantage of Israel and to the disadvantage of the interest of the United States of America.
But let me just again come back to the Israeli perspective on this. If you have a dangerous enemy with sophisticated weapons and they are deliberately embedded in a civilian population, what's the alternative? What should they have done?
Well, we have a very difficult opponent in North Korea. And for various reasons, we're not invading North Korea. There are plenty of difficult opponents. If it's a simple matter of hitting a switch and making them disappear, it's one thing. But the fact of the matter is that that isn't easily done in this case and in many other cases. My view is what the Israelis should have done is hit Hezbollah hard, which is to say carefully delineated targets, and then used the provocation by Hezbollah in order to seize the diplomatic high ground. There was, at the beginning of the war, which is to say the 12th and 13th of July, a lot of support for cutting Hezbollah down to size. Much of that support, I'm talking now inside of Lebanon, much of that support has now disappeared. So what's happened is that we have seen a situation created in which Hezbollah is likely to emerge from this war dynamic, influential and popular throughout the Middle East. Moreover, because of the destruction that has been inflicted on Lebanon, Iran, much against U.S. interest, will be a major provider of assistance to rebuild many of these areas which have been destroyed. I can't imagine U.S. taxpayers providing the foreign aid necessary to rebuild these scores of villages, not to mention thousands of apartments that have been destroyed by Israeli bombing. And as a result, Iran will actually gain influence in Lebanon. Moreover, the very stability and survival of the Lebanese government is now in question. So what has been created is a horrendous situation. Frankly, what the Israelis have done is strategically counterproductive.
Augustus Richard Norton is a professor of international relations and anthropology at Boston University. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Augustus Richard Norton, a professor of international relations and anthropology at Boston University. He has a forthcoming book on Hezbollah. You know, the U.S. experience in Vietnam had profound effects on its own military and political thinking, and I certainly have to believe that the long and painful Israeli occupation of Lebanon in the past affected its own leaders deeply. And when this incursion occurred, I had to think that the Israeli leaders would not have made a decision to go back into Lebanon without a carefully considered plan that was informed in some way by its earlier experience. Do you think Israel brought lessons from its past involvement to the current crisis, or is it suffering from amnesia here?
Well, I think that, first of all, this was an operation that was not conceived in an afternoon. This was a well-planned operation, and it reflects the desires of the Israelis, as I've emphasized, with U.S. support, to strike at Hezbollah, to sort of make up for some of the humiliation that has been imposed by Hezbollah on Israeli forces, and also, by extension, to hit Iran, which, of course, is the major remaining regional adversary for Israel. So there was a strategic plan here. They saw Lebanon, but they were really seeing Iran in significant measure. Now, there were lessons they should have drawn, but I think the Israeli overconfidence about what they could accomplish in Lebanon was conditioned less by a memory of what had happened in Lebanon than by their experience with the Palestinians, who they push around fairly easily.
I note that some in news accounts, some of the Israeli soldiers' deaths have come from anti-tank missiles. I mean, this isn't the kind of weaponry that one associates with the guerrilla army, really.
No, this is a these are weapons which no doubt are provided by Syria and Iran. Anti-tank weapons were used during the occupation period. Frequently against Israeli bunkers and that sort of thing, though many of the attacks during the occupation phase were lower tech, involving mines, remote control mines, and that sort of thing. So there's no question that they have been ramped up in terms of the technologies that they are using. But it must be said, and in fact this is something that's easily verified, many of these weapons these days are relatively easy to acquire. There's a vast international market in what is now basically relatively inexpensive guided weapon systems, precision guidance weapon systems, anti-tank weapons, and so on. So we shouldn't be surprised to see a motivated force like Hezbollah using these weapons, and we should expect to see them in other places as well. I should also say that this war that we're playing out right now is going to have, I suspect, a momentous effect on military affairs in the region. I mean, basically what Hezbollah has provided is a model for how one confronts a modern, organized military force of great sophistication, such as Israel has.
What do you mean by that? Where else will one see that lesson applied?
Well, I think we're going to see, and we are seeing actually, a sort of overflow of lessons from Lebanon to Iraq. And of course, the Lebanon War has very much reverberated in Iraq, both politically and militarily. I mean, basically, what the Hezbollah fighters are doing is fighting a very mobile war. They're not at all stationary. They're fighting in small teams, sort of triangular teams of sometimes three people. They're people who do not need sophisticated communications. They've been trained to use lethal but relatively simple weapons and so on. And they're, for that reason, they're very hard to find. And not to mention, of course, they know the terrain. This is their; these are their homes. I mean, these people are not from Mars. These are their homes. This is terrain they've known since they were babies. So I think the application in Iraq is very obvious. I think we could see much more determined and much more difficult to defeat insurgency actions in Iraq as a result of what's going on in Lebanon right now.
Augustus Richard Norton is a professor of international relations and anthropology at Boston University. He has a forthcoming book on Hezbollah. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, filling in for Terry Gross. As negotiations continue in the United Nations over a ceasefire proposal for Lebanon, we're speaking with Augustus Richard Norton, a professor of international relations and anthropology at Boston University. Before his entry into academia, Norton had a 27-year military career, which included 14 months as an observer in southern Lebanon in 1980 and 81. He has a forthcoming book on Hezbollah. I want to talk a bit about how the United States has responded to the outbreak of the war in southern Lebanon. You know, the Bush administration, of course, has effectively no relations with Syria. It regards Hezbollah as a terrorist group. And stood by Israel in the early going and has begun to try and cobble together some sort of proposals for a ceasefire in place. What do you think of the course that the Bush administration has taken in this conflict?
I spend a lot of time when I'm not in the Middle East or teaching at Boston University and places like Washington. I have a lot of interaction with other people who are sort of professional foreign policy specialist and so on. And I would say that if there's one thing that almost all of these people agree on, as well as many retired diplomats and dignitaries and so on, is that what the U.S. has done is established a relationship with its adversaries, which is totally, totally nonproductive. Which is to say, we have said to our adversaries that we're not going to talk to you unless you behave like we want you to behave. Well, by definition, adversaries don't do that. We need to have a dialogue with countries like Iran, as unpalatable as that may be, with countries like Syria, and so on. The fact that we are trying to deal, for example, with the Lebanon War, without having those channels of communication. We don't even have an ambassador in Syria, and we certainly don't have one in Iran, means that we have really handicapped ourselves in terms of the needed communications to really do the kind of quiet negotiation and discussion that has to take place. In 1996, when Israel conducted a major incursion into Lebanon, although much smaller than the current war, it was a process of negotiation involving France, the United States, Iran, and Syria, as well as indirectly Hezbollah, incidentally, that led to the closure of that particular conflict period and established a functioning set of rules that worked pretty well up until the 12th of July of this year.
Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice was quoted recently as saying that the current conflict in Lebanon represents the birth pangs of a new Middle East. What was the context of that remark and its impact in the Muslim world?
The Secretary of State was in Beirut while the country was under a devastating attack. Infrastructure was disappearing because it was being blown up. People were being killed by the scores and hundreds. And in effect, the Lebanese were experiencing collective punishment by the Israelis. Secretary Rice's comment that this represented the birth pangs of a Middle East struck, to be polite, most listeners in Lebanon and beyond as insensitive, and made many people wondering what planet she thought she was on. Certainly I had that feeling. It may be that Condoleezza Rice and George Bush believe that what they're doing by supporting Israel in this war is creating a new Middle East, but believe me, the Middle East they're creating is going to be horrific in appearance and is going to bear no resemblance at all to the prattle we hear from administration spokesmen, including the president, I should say.
Well, what do you mean by the Middle East that it will create?
The Iraq War has been a catastrophe. What it has done is destabilized Iraq to the point that it is now in a civil war. We have created a situation in Iraq where one of our major adversaries in the region, arguably our major adversary, Iran, has actually been a major beneficiary. And in fact, Iranian influence in Iraq has grown very dramatically since 2003. Meantime, people across the Muslim world, but particularly in the Middle East and the Arab world, have seen this invasion as evidence of America's desire not to promote democracy and liberal values and so on, but basically to attack and destroy Iraq. The Lebanon war is similarly exacerbating animosity and enmity towards the United States. We've seen widespread demonstrations across the region supporting not Israel and the U.S., but Hezbollah. And we have seen, basically, people who are our friends and our allies, including political reformers in the region, who have been very much put on the defensive because of the fact that what the U.S. seems to be doing to the region in the eyes of the people of the region is helping to destroy it, not to build it. So I think this is very, very counterproductive. It is not, in my belief, in our interest to create circumstances where our adversaries, like Iran, actually gain influence and where movements like Hezbollah become the most popular political movement in the region.
Well, Augustus Richard Norton, thanks so much for speaking with us.
My pleasure.
Augustus Richard Norton is a professor of international relations and anthropology at Boston University. He has a forthcoming book on Hezbollah.